and thank you for having me today. I'm Dawn Crawford. I'm the Communications Director at the Colorado Children's Immunization Coalition. We are a nonprofit organization out in Colorado, so we're a small but very mighty organization. So it's really nice to juxtaposition the giant CDC and our tiny little organization in Colorado. So I think this will be a good thing. So today we kind of want to talk about how to be more of an advocate online and how to use social media to engage people to really kind of talk about vaccines in a really positive way. So first off, I just want to say that teamwork is awesome. You know, the reason that I'm able to be successful on social media is because of the CDC and because of state organizations that have all that fantastic content that I'm able to share and retweet and put on Facebook. You know, universities, researchers, scientists, and doctors are also really fabulous, too, for a lot of content. So that's where we look to just regurgitate all the good things that you say. And that, you know, we're all in this together. It's being a voice for good and to increase that pro-vaccine chatter is incredibly important, and it's something that we could do through social media. And together, you know, we really can stem the tide and turn this around. You know, the more that we engage personally and professionally and talk about how much we love vaccines and how important they are, the more we're going to take down people like Jenny McCarthy and the anti-vacciners. And it's true. We can do it. You know, and it's just everybody working. It is. You know, Jenny McCarthy did block us on Twitter within 24 hours of her having an account. So she knows who we are. You know, she knows the organizations that she's worried about. And so this is my super secret tip about social media. I'm sharing this with you today. You know, and it's about being a person. This is our team at CCIC, all three of us. And, you know, it's about being a person. Social media allows you to engage people on a personal level. It lets you become friends with people online and connect with people across the country, across your state, in your city, and people who really care about vaccines, answer questions, all those things. It's so important that everybody get engaged. So I'm going to kind of go through some tools that we use and that you can use too. So definitely leveraging your website. So everybody has a website we've all spent lots of money on, and we're like, oh, social media, it's all new. Well, there's a lot of cool things you can do with your website. You can really promote more of your education. You can set up a blog on there just by adding new content. One thing that we did last fall was a Healthy Kids Thankathon. So at CCIC, it's really important for us to talk about the health benefits of vaccines, that we keep kids healthy rather than talking about disease. And so for Thanksgiving, we allowed parents and aunts and uncles to submit photos and stories about why they vaccinated their kids. And we got over 35 submissions, which was really great for something we did in about 2 weeks. So we're very agile and very quick. But also we got really great national coverage from bloggers, and we even got on the local news with this story. So it's just how you can leverage your social media into bigger and broader things. So Facebook, we talked a little bit about that here, but it's a great place to share information. Honestly, for CCIC, this has been a challenge for us. We have close to 300 fans. So I think it's not a nut that we've been able to crack, but it's something that I'm glad that we're on there, that people can get that information in that source if they want it. We also have a mom blog. So we have hired a mom to blog for us and talk about vaccines in a really positive way. At the very top of all these slides is our addresses, so you can check that out. So it's a weekly blog, and she talks about all the fears and concerns that parents have in a very frank and very simple way. Recently, we have actually added a new thing of having guest moms, so we can broaden that scope and that spectrum of voices of moms that care about vaccines. Niche social media networks like Moms Like Me is a great place to engage. It's a pretty raw area. We've had some pushback and some real negative banter back and forth, so you do have to engage and comment and massage the conversation a little bit to be pro-vaccine. But I think it's also important because parents come in and read that. They want to know. They ask a lot of questions about vaccines on these sites. So the more that you can go in and monitor and see what they're saying and engage, the better. So Twitter has by far been our most successful tool. We have around 1,600 followers, which I'm super excited about. I don't have a million, but I'm pretty excited about 1,600. And we use it to really interact and to really be our brand voice. So On this page even, you can see that we retweet, so we share information, we engage people and we monitor their tweets, and then also we say fun things like, must create the presentation for NIC right now, no more dilly-dallying. So it's about being a person, it's about, you know, sometimes I talk about what we had at our coalition meetings for lunch, and it's just being a person on this space. And also, we use it a lot. So right there where it's highlighted, we've sent out over 5,000 tweets in a year. So we engage on this multiple times a day. My big tip about Twitter is that if you can't engage more than once a day, it's probably not the best place for you. It's something you have to have a lot of frequency to make it that community building tool for your organization. One thing that we've done to acknowledge and to thank our favorite pro-vaccine people is set up a Twitter list. So this is a short list of people, it's 38 people, of people we love the most and we pay attention to. What I've noticed too is that people will use this, other organizations who are pro-vaccine will go onto this list and just follow all the people on our list in order, and so they know who are some good people to follow too, and that's what we encourage every organization to do, is look through other people's lists, see who they're following, and follow those good people too. And sometimes we follow people who are not so good just to see what they're saying. So, so these are my superhero tools for monitoring Twitter. So TweetDeck is a great, great tool. It's something that you can download to your desktop. It's all free. Both of these tools are completely free. And we do live monitoring. So I'll search by words like vaccine, immunization, to see who's talking about it, how they're talking about it, if it's positive or negative. And then I'll engage people. If they have questions about vaccines, I'll answer them. If they have, you know, with content from the CDC and other organizations. If they're being really negative or kind of crazy, I'll ask them, so where'd you get that information? Why don't you share the science with me? I'd really love to see that study that says that vaccines cause this horrible thing. And usually they can't. So it's interesting. It's very good. And then Hootsuite is another really fantastic tool online. And you can update your Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and blog all from this one place. And you can schedule updates. So throughout the day, like my very first thing of the day is to come in for 30 minutes and read through headlines and then schedule tweets to go out throughout the day. So when I want to be working on other stuff or if I'm meetings, I'm still sending out tweets through this tool. You can also click all your track throughs. So that's actually what it shows there. So that actually tracks the clicks that we're getting on our tweets. So we can see what people like to read, what they don't like to read, and then give them more content of things they find useful. And you know, this is what it's all about. This is a mom that reached out to us. She sent out a random tweet asking about H1N1. She was concerned about the vaccine. She was asking her mom friends on Twitter about the vaccine. I dropped in and I said, here's all this great information about it. It's completely safe. It's just like the seasonal flu vaccine. All the great talking points that we hear every day. And we have kept up a relationship. And this is what it's about. It's about real connections with real people and really helping people deal with all this fear and anxiety that parents get about vaccines. It's a hard thing to see your baby get a shot. And so the more that organizations, like everybody in this room, can be there and be the voice for supporting them and helping them make the right choice is just a really good thing. So that's me. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you all for your presentations. We've got a couple minutes for questions, so please feel free to come to the mic and ask anything from any one of our panel members.
Thanks so much for your guys' presentations. I'm from the Washington State Department of Health, and I just want to know more. I agree with all the metrics and the evaluation piece, but is there any good research or information you think about going on to the next piece about measuring or people who've done a good job of looking at health outcomes to all the social media work, or is this still kind of, from what my research, it still seems kind of like an area we're learning about where the health health outcome impact's gonna come in. But I just didn't know if you had any advice or what you're seeing out there in this area.
Well, I'll just say that I do think it's, for the most part, something that's just now starting to happen. We have done a couple sort of preliminary things. So we've looked at our Twitter followers and have asked them questions about, do these tweets, you know, what kind of tweets do you want to get? Who who is your audience when you have over a million followers? We have, you know, we have no idea who these people are. So, you know, who are you, and what kind of messages do you want? And so we're starting to look at that, but we're also starting to ask, you know, what are you doing with these tweets? You know, is there any health impact? We just did a very similar thing for our text messaging pilot and found, I think it was 62% of people said that the messages did actually, were actually, you know, they were going to change behaviors based on messages that they got from that. And we're sort of in the point of putting out a report, and we'll share that with people when we have it. But there's tons of really good health behavior and impact surveys done on gaming. Not so much around immunizations, but a lot around healthy eating. They can show, you know, like really good increases in fruit and vegetable consumption, diabetes prevention. There's a really interesting study that was done with kids with cancer and found that they had better outcomes if they played video games. So lots of good research there. There's lots of research about smoking cessation on mobile phones and some other platforms. So, you know, it's maybe platform specific at this point and trying to measure, I think, a campaign effect is going to be very difficult, but I'd love to, if anybody knows of anything like that, we would love to hear about it.
A long time ago, post grad school, I worked for AT&T as the cell phone carrier, and during that time is when Amber Alerts became part of the national, and those are a free service message. Has CDC looked into a way to get that, you know, because obviously it can be done so that we could use text messaging for health messages, but people wouldn't have to worry about the service cost?
We have looked into it, and the answer has been no, even for emergencies. I mean, we said, you know, you do this for Amber Alerts. There's a new thing called Text for Baby, if you guys have heard of that. And so it's providing text messages sort of timed with pregnancy, and it's in English and Spanish, and I think it's going to be a very cool thing. They're just starting to evaluate that as well. And they were actually able to negotiate through CTIA, this Cellular Trade Association, free text messages, but it's only maybe for a certain amount of time. The person who negotiated that said, "Don't you cannot have my contacts." So, I mean, it's something we would like to work towards, but for the most part, in the United States at least, people will have to pay for those messages. We haven't seen, I mean, I think it goes a little bit against conventional wisdom. People think if they have to pay, that's a bad thing. But what we're seeing is that people, a lot of people, especially lower income groups, have plans. They have nicer data plans than middle class people do sometimes. So we haven't seen a huge impediment from people for people doing that, but I think it still needs to be studied more.
And to add to that, too, I think, you know, we need to also look at whether people are choosing to receive the health messages, and those who have kind of opted in may be more receptive to them. So sometimes we've, you know, there have been instances we've learned of through our colleagues where there's been a big push, and sometimes those messages were not well received because people didn't want them, they didn't know what they were. So I think we have to think through those questions as well.
Hi, I'm Serene Forte. I'm from MedImmune. My question is in, first of all, thanks for all the presentations, is in regards to the applications of these things in getting public health messages out in developing countries. Is the CDC looking at that? Are you working in conjunction with anyone on that, or is this purely domestic application?
So our group has been working with the Global Health Group specific on some very specific text messaging plans and programs. We haven't done sort of a mass social media plan for any groups there, but Holly can talk a little bit about what we did for Haiti. In Kenya, there's a project where we actually, one of our tech team members devised a text messaging system for use in Kenya because, you know, in certain areas of Africa, it's very remote. And so just being able to provide text messages to people. This was on for blood donations, and it was to drive blood donations. But the project that we're doing in Costa Rica is about, you know, using health messages So, and if you want to talk about Haiti.
Definitely. One of the reasons, when you say developing countries, my mind immediately goes to mobile, because what we're finding is that, you know, because some countries, especially in Africa, this is very true, it's so expensive to lay the infrastructure for landlines, so people are jumping over personal computers, they're going directly to mobile phones, and they're using those as personal computers. So I think that's really where we're gonna see the most development for developing countries. In Haiti, there was obviously a huge need to get information to people on the ground. A lot of the infrastructure was either non-existent or down at the time, so mobile phones there also were the best bet. We worked with a group called Frontline SMS, who had a group on the ground in Haiti who are coordinating services, and they actually had an opt-in helpline for Haitians. They could opt into the service, they could text in questions, they get answers back. And we were able to distill the most important health messages for the people who are in Haiti at the moment, send those out via text message through our collaboration with Frontline SMS. So they were very basic health messages to people who had already, you know, signaled that they wanted some help in that area. And I think, you know, it was one of our only options at that point. We were obviously putting out a lot of web info, but they just couldn't get to it. So we did use it for that purpose.
And just to talk a little bit more about what Frontline SMS, I mean, they built that system in like 2 days. It was a 911 system for Haiti. And people could also text in their location. And so they were sending water to people who said, I need water at this location, or I'm looking for this missing person, I last saw them here. So the location-based part of mobile, I think, is an area that's gonna grow a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go for it. Jill Rourke is gonna take it from the floor.
Hi, I'm Jill, and I work with all of them, actually. And the CDC Foundation is also, if you can hear me, the CDC Foundation is also very interested in this, because they've been working with a number of groups across CDC to do to use mobile technology in other ways, like, you know, through epidemiology and surveillance and things like that. And so they've been looking at taking that one step further into communications as well. So that is actually something the CDC Foundation is looking to support at CDC with help from private sector partners.
You just
we'll be passing some more questions to Jill.
Yeah, we'll start delegating all of them.
I have about 5 o'clock, so if you have any additional questions, maybe our panel members would be willing to stay for a couple minutes. But thank you all. I appreciate your insight and sharing the information that you have.